Welcoming you to Be In The Know, where we muse with the great and the good, afforded pitchside views of the best of the Premier League action. And there is only one place to start. It's the ultimate showdown in the Premier League season. It's Manchester United versus Liverpool. Klopp's men, and particularly the Egyptian king, put in a salivating performance. But the focus rests on United. Under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, they suffered their biggest defeat to Liverpool at Old Trafford, Salah making history with a hat-trick. We're joined by three writers who watched a capitulation, a surrender. Joining us, Ian Ladyman, the football editor at the Daily Mail, Simon Peach, chief football writer at the Press Association, and Charlotte Dunker, Manchester United correspondent. For goal, much has been made of Paul Scholes' suggestion that if Manchester United went with the same tactics and performed in the same way as they had against Atalanta in midweek, then Liverpool would punish them. And we have our own resident psychic here today, because Ian, on 2 days ago, you wrote this in the Mail. You said, on Sunday, it marks the 10-year anniversary that Manchester City came to Old Trafford and won 6-1. At halftime against Atalanta, it was hard not to wonder just how that anniversary would be marked. Liverpool are the visitors, and they've scored at least three times in every away game they have played this season. You foresaw the events that unfolded. Did you ever imagine it would be this ugly?
I didn't foresee them, really. I thought it was a nice way to start a piece, but I didn't think it would really happen. Jurgen Klopp said himself on Friday afternoon that he didn't think Liverpool would score three. Of course, they didn't score three; they scored five. I didn't think Liverpool would go there and score three times. I wasn't even convinced they would win. United have a habit, or if not a habit, an occasional tendency under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to produce a performance against a big rival when they need one. They've beaten Manchester City before. They played reasonably well against Liverpool before. I thought it might be one of those occasions. United have incredible firepower. Liverpool's defence this season, despite their great starts this season, their defence has not been watertight. It wasn't watertight in Madrid on Tuesday night where I was to watch them. They had a guy playing yesterday. He was making only his second Premier League start. I thought United had a chance in the game. I didn't think that after about 10 minutes. It was an extraordinary 45 minutes, particularly. I was at Old Trafford when City beat them 6-1. That was felt like a monumental game. Yesterday felt quite different. Yesterday felt extraordinary. And the fallout for Solskjaer could be quite significant now.
Peach, you described the scenes. What are the standout moments?
Do you know what? I don't think I've left a match so shell-shocked before. I know there's been kind of hints that there were issues, but this was kind of the crystallisation of everyone's worst fears about this side. Just the way that the defence kept... there wasn't any part of Manchester United's game that was any good. They had a few chances going forwards, but their pressing wasn't great from the front. When Fred did press in midfield, he left a massive gap behind him because he wasn't pressing with enough intelligence. The defending was terrible. Harry Maguire and Luke Shaw, two of the best players at the Euros, were awful. It just didn't really make sense. What I would say is that the Man United fans, I know a lot of them left, and I can't blame them. As a fan of a club who's lost 9-0 twice, I would have probably done the same. I thought that was on the cards again at one point. But they were singing in defiance right until the end, and that just shows what a special support they can be. But there does come a time when you go, are we on the right track here? And yesterday was that day for me.
You did have some strong words, some positives, steadfast, self-confident. You were talking about Ollie's post-match press conference and the belief he has in himself that this project has come a long way and still has time to go. Is he delusional?
I hope not, because that isn't going to help anyone. I think you need to have self-confidence. And one thing that, while Ollie might be always smiling and happy, he's got a hard edge to him, and he's got a thick skin, and he's going to need that this week in particular. It shouldn't be forgotten, as dreadful as Sunday was, just what he has done for this club. Not forget the playing side of it. He he turned around a culture of the group on and off the field after his arrival back at the club in December 2018. There has been progress. There's been too many down moments and too many familiar patterns of going down and having to respond. Maybe this is the one that's just too far. I hope not for his sake, because he's a good man with Manchester United in his heart. But at the same time, there's lots of people that are like that, and they're not Manchester United manager. There needs to be a response. They've got three games now before the international break. To me, they're all huge. And that's the final international break of the year. So it feels like a very key period.
Ian, Gary Neville suggesting finally that there may need to be change. But the argument again and again is, who is there? Where is there a top class manager? Is this not the failing of Manchester United to not identify them? Where was Rafa Benitez before he went to Liverpool? Where was Brendan Rodgers before he went to Liverpool? Where was Jurgen Klopp before he went to Liverpool? Who have they really brought through as a manager in the last, since Sir Alex Ferguson left?
Well, I mean, United did identify Klopp, and they spoke to him, and Edward spoke to him, and he turned them down. But I take your point. I mean, what's the best way to say this? I think I remember writing at the time, or thinking at the time, when they gave the interim job to Solskjaer, it was an interim job. There was absolutely no belief or suspicion or intention to appoint him full time. What happened after Solskjaer became caretaker manager, when they went on that run of games where they won and won and won and won, including games like away at Tottenham, where David De Gea made about 54 world-class saves, but they won, and away at PSG, where they get the penalty late on and they get through. Games really that just kind of went their way, as games can. And they got on such a roll that ultimately United almost had no choice but to give him the job. And I remember saying at the time that was either going to be the best thing that had ever happened to Manchester United, or the worst thing, in that they'd kind of got given this guy a job to look after the club for a few months, and then results had gone such a way that they had no choice but to appoint him almost. And I'm afraid that as we sit here now, you can kind of maybe look at some lost time when somebody else may have more experience or greater stature could have been given the job. Mauricio Pochettino has been out of work in that time. Obviously, it wasn't United were in a position to give him the job then, and now he's working it again at PSG. I agree with Simon. Simon's absolutely right about Solskjaer and the way that he has steadied Manchester United. If Solskjaer lost his job soon, in the next week, for example, he could probably still be seen as a Manchester United manager who'd done a reasonable job to take them from the mess that they were, the toxic, self-harming mess that they were under Jose Mourinho, to a club that had at least had a culture and understanding of where they wanted to go, a dressing room that functioned to a degree, a second place finish last year, Champions League football. All of that he has done. And I wrote a column about a month ago saying that until they could find the right person, they should stick with Solskjaer. But that was with one important thing in mind, and that is that United remain a top four team. They were when I wrote that column. The one thing that will terrify the Glazers is not that they might not win anything. You know, they'll never win the Premier League under Solskjaer. That won't terrify the Glazers. What terrifies the Glazers is the prospect of United falling out of the top four positions and all the financial kind of knock-on effects that has. That is the greatest threat to Solskjaer now. When I wrote that column a month ago, he was in the top four. And I said, no point sacking him until he can find an elite coach to take them from fourth to first. But now it's different. Now he's now the seventh, and they're going that way. And if when they emerge from these games against Tottenham and City and Chelsea and Arsenal, if they're eighth, ninth, 10th, 11th, then he is in, you know, we think he's in trouble today, then he'll be in trouble then. And that's always been the problem with Solskjaer, is that he's done a reasonable job, but he's not an elite coach. He's not an elite coach, and Manchester United have to find one.
Charlotte, you're with this team week in, week out. We've seen the likes of Luke Shaw really up their game and improve themselves, but himself, Harry Maguire, didn't have their best moments. And these are the big games where they are tested, where their nerve and their character has to show through. is he still improving players? Are you seeing a step back, or do you believe they can revive those fortunes?
I think at the moment, I don't think we're seeing any progress whatsoever. As a team, they don't look like they have any clue what they're doing. If you looked at the back four yesterday, that's a back four that has been, his until Varane came, that's probably his first choice back four. It's been like that for the last couple of seasons, but they played like four people who've never met each other before. So you look at that and you think, what are they practicing on the training ground? So it's not even, for me, it's not even about individual player development at the moment, because if there was one individual that you could pinpoint these performances on, then you'd think, fair enough, he can do some individual coaching with him to help him up his game. At the minute, I just think as a team, as a squad, they're just not gelling at all. And some of that comes down to tactics. Some of that's got to come down to the game plan. And at times, there just doesn't seem to be any game plan or tactics. Is that the players aren't listening to what they're being told on the training ground and they can't execute it? Or are they not being told coherently enough what the plan is? Then that's where there seems to be this gulf between the two things. Is it a coaching thing, or is it on the players? And I think both sides are going to have to take responsibility for the mess that United find themselves in at the moment.
The terrifying thing about that, Charlotte, is that when you watch them play, and I don't see them play live as often as you do, but I see them enough, is that it's the same flaws every week,
yeah,
isn't it? So you watch them away at Leicester, and every time Leicester get within kind of 40 yards of United's goal, if you're a United fan, you're absolutely terrified because there are holes everywhere. It's like a knife through butter. You watched them yesterday. It's the same. United can be a potent force when they have the ball, simply because they have such good attacking players. When they don't have the ball, the same problems emerge. That's a coaching issue. Surely that's a coaching issue. He has to fix that, either in a game or between games. He has to fix that. And do you see any sign that he's fixing it? I don't.
No. And if you listen to him in his pre-match press conference, for example, before the Liverpool game, they said they identified the problems that had caused that Leicester defeat, and all these things have got to change. And it's like you say, it's exactly the same game plan is replicated week after week. And if you're an opposition manager, you're setting up your team, you know exactly what you need to do to beat Manchester United. And it's so easy to do it because they're so easy to play through. I think Brendan Rodgers said it after the Leicester game. I think he was quite surprised at the lack of pressing, especially in midfield from United. And I personally didn't see that there'd been any improvement from that at Old Trafford on Sunday against Liverpool. So they've had a week from that dreadful performance at Leicester. Did we see any improvement to the capitulation against Liverpool? No, and they've got another week until they play Tottenham. Is there going to be any improvement in this in the coming week to show that they can move on from that? I'm not too sure. And I think that's maybe what is the worst, most damning thing about United at the moment, is that how on earth are they going to get themselves out of this?
Simon, there was that image that is going to live long in the memory. Sir Alex Ferguson's face, utter despair, and had given up all sense that they could turn this match around. And I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer asked when was the moment he felt he had to shut up shop, and he said at 4-0. I mean, I think that's pretty staggering in itself. But imagine those images if it was Manchester City at Old Trafford. Describe how that can't happen again in that city, and how on earth can he stop it?
That image was, I remember it pops up on the monitor at Old Trafford straight after the fifth goal, and then it split to Kenny Dalglish looking obviously a lot happier than Sir Alex, and it did kind of underline everything that had happened on Sunday. I don't want any spoilers here, so apologies, but I don't know if any of you watch Squid Game. There's a bit where I won't say exactly what, but there's a bit where there's people that are expected to win because of their individual qualities, but they get beaten by people that have a clearer tactical plan. Often Manchester United can beat teams with their individual qualities. They are found out, they have been in the last four Premier League games, have got 1 point. They need to find a way of acting as a team rather than a group of individuals. That was the problem towards the end of the Jose Mourinho era. It's when those individuals stopped gelling or stopped working together. Now it feels like they've reached that point with Solskjaer, and he himself has said this is his darkest moment. He has said that it is rock bottom. He has also led the side back from bad moments before, and assuming he gets the opportunity to do that before the international break, he has to really show some improvements on a variety of different fronts. And it's not just him, it's his coaching staff as well.
Ian, Zinedine Zidane is a name that's been connected because at the moment he is one of the most successful out of work managers. It doesn't seem to get the respect he deserves in this country. What is your interpretation of him as a manager? Was he just a manager that went into a great club, or has he won Champions League finals against teams like, I think the Atletico final rings true for me, when he didn't have the strongest of squad, when it was in transition and he still got over the line with them?
Can't argue against his record, and it's easy just to say, oh, well, he was a manager who was lucky enough to inherit a great group of players. He did inherit a great group of players. We still got to coach them and look after them and pick the team and do the tactics, etc. So they won't do that on their own. But I think there is a little bit of a fear of the unknown there, because we haven't really seen him operate in any other circumstance. And without a doubt, he would be a risk. We also don't know, by the way, what his appetite for it would be. We don't know, because the appetite has to be vast to take this job on, because it's huge, and the challenge is at Manchester United is always to win the Premier League. And look at the standard of the three teams at the top of the Premier League. It's not like you're trying to get ahead of one team, or you're trying to get ahead of a team that might be slightly in kind of regression. You're looking at three teams in Chelsea, Manchester City, and Liverpool who are all still kind of on an upward path and are going to get better before they level off and then inevitably start to get worse, as even the best teams always do. So that's the size of the challenge. So if you're Zinedine Zidane, I don't know if you have the appetite for that challenge, and I don't know if there is. If you're the Glazers and Ed Woodward and Richard Arnold and Dan Fletcher and John Murta, the guys who would be making this decision, obviously they'll speak to people who know him, just like they'll speak to people who know Antonio Conte and other coaches. But you asked me about Zidane, and you can ask as many people as you like about a manager, but the thing that speaks greatest about any coach is a CV and a body of work. And Zidane's body of work is sounds weird to say limited, because he's won the Champions League, but it's short. Let's say that it's short. It's short, and it's not. There's no breadth to it either. It's a tricky one.
Who would you bring in?
Well, this is the thing. United have to decide whether they want to, and Gary Neville described it well yesterday. Do they want to hire a hitman? Do they want to hire a hitman? That's how Gary Neville described it. Do they want to hire a hitman? I.e., do they want to go down the Chelsea model, where you can get a coach in, who will come in, he will do things his way, he'll want to buy a couple of players, he'll play the way that he wants to play, he won't give a stuff about this kind of United legacy of always having a kind of academy player in the first team. He'll just want to win, and he might win you something, and then he'll set fire to place and he'll go. And then someone else will come in. It's the Mourinho model of recent years, the Conte model. Obviously it's Conte that I'm kind of getting at. That's United have to make that decision. Are they now at a point where you kind of step away from what they wanted when they appointed David Moyes, which was kind of longevity, a six-year contract, whatever it was, carry on the work of Alex Ferguson. They stepped away from it to get a gun for hire, which was Mourinho, worked for a degree, won the Europa League, and then the roof fell in like it always does. Then they went to Solskjaer, let's try and do the long-term model again, the United way, whatever that's supposed to be. And then the question is now do you go back to the kind of, right, let's just get some trophies. Let's get a couple of trophies. Antonio Conte is the answer to that. He did it at Chelsea. It exploded. Did it at Inter? Exploded. That's the answer to that. If that's the priority now, that's the answer. But I don't know what the answer is 2 years hence when he goes.
Yeah, because if they go back to that model and then it all goes up in flames, like you say, and they win something, and then whoever moves on, they can't then go back to what they've done this time around and bring someone back in to do the whole rebuild, to get the culture back to where it was, which is what Solskjaer has been tasked with doing and has done really well. Because otherwise you're just going to go on a 5-year cycle, aren't you? With someone comes shorter. In but burns the house down, get someone in to get it all back in order, back to how Manchester United should be, how Manchester United want to be. They don't win something, then you go back to the other thing of bringing in a serial winner and see if that works for you. So,
but then there is an argument that and Chelsea fans would probably say, well, what's worked for us? I mean, yeah. you know, they've won multiple trophies in the Abramovich era, using multiple managers and multiple players and multiple styles of play. But they've got, if you click on the Wikipedia page and click onto honours, then they're all there. You could argue, but it's United and their supporters have always been sniffy about that, as we know. Well, that's not the way we do it.
The shame would be, as we discussed earlier, how well Solskjaer has done to get the club reshaped and back in the right culture to succeed. He might not be the right man down the line, but he's got the club back in the right position to then kick on. And to rip that up for a quick fire manager who might bring you a League Cup, an FA Cup, whatever, it would seem counterproductive.
So given that none of the great and the good of Manchester United, who we all like and a great value, but we spend all our time listening to them, whether it be Gary Neville or Paul Scholes or Rio Ferdinand, none of them have ever wanted to do it. Dan Fletcher's gone upstairs. Solskjaer's given it a go and it's not working. So where's the path, Simon? Where's the path to that person?
I think that's the issue we have in October. There's nobody in the market right now that would seem a seamless fit, is there? That's the issue. Unless you're going to pay a big chunk of money and be a really an attractive proposition. And yeah, United, in my mind, are the biggest club in the world still, but they're not as an attractive proposition as they would be in an October when you're on a downward spiral with more questions than answers.
I can give them the idea. I think Conte came to Chelsea, was there for 2 years. Behind the scenes, he couldn't stay any longer. But it wasn't like a Mourinho bonfire at the end. The dressing room were tired of his tactics. Bring him in for 2 years, spend the rest of the time identifying who's going to come next.
That's what they're supposed to be doing now. It's not working.
They haven't found someone else. And Ian, they're resolute in sticking by Ollie still?
Well, that's what they say. That's what they say, But you know, in football, however resolute you want to be, certain things happen, don't they, that change things. And those certain things are very, very bad results. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer can absolutely survive 2 or 3 months in fifth position, sixth position. He can't survive 2 or 3 months in 10th position. Can he? I don't think he can. I don't think he can. Not down there with Wolves and Brentford and Aston Villa and Everton, with the greatest respect to those teams. I don't think Manchester United will wear that.
Peachy, they have to be asking, don't they?
Yeah, all the noises have been supportive of the manager, but that was before the result. And as Ian rightly says, there comes a point where things change, the dynamics change. They've got Tottenham away, another club that are struggling next weekend. They've got Atalanta in the Champions League, and we saw what happened in the home fixture, that Atalanta are a very tough side, and then they got Manchester City at home. Similar performances, never mind results, in those matches, and they will be in mid-table, maybe even bottom half of the table, heading into to the winter period, and they will be in jeopardy of making it through in the Champions League, perhaps. I know they're top of the group at the moment, but that can change very quickly, as United found out last season in the Champions League. So it's a really, it's a good job that they earn a lot of money at United to make these tough decisions, because this is a very key period in their history, it feels like.
Charlotte, we haven't even got to, and it's absolutely unfair. Liverpool, how good were they?
I thought they were good, but if I'm being honest, I think they still could have gone up a few gears. And I think that said everything you needed to know about Manchester United's performance, because I'm not saying the victory was handed to them on a plate, but the way United played made it a lot easier for Liverpool to be good. I was definitely impressed with the midfield. I think before you went into that game, you knew that it was going to be a game that was won in the middle. And when you compare the two sides midfields and the way they've been playing recently, there was only going to be one winner there. But you look at the way they're playing and they look great, don't they? Salah's on fire. And just the way they got through United with ease as well. It was just so easy for them at all times. United's back line was an absolute shambles. So, yeah, I thought Liverpool did play well, but I didn't think they were out of this world. And they definitely could have gone through the gears more. And if we're being honest, after Pogba got sent off, if they'd kept pressing United, they could have won about 8 or 9-0.
Lots of questions about Salah's contract, Ian. The big key point seems to be he wants to end his career then. Even Steven Gerrard didn't manage that. Can he be offered that? And after that performance, does he deserve it?
He deserves it. And obviously, Liverpool would offer him that without a doubt, I'm sure. I think the issue for Salah, and I've written about this before, I think last season, the issue for Salah is people... People want in the modern game want loyalty. They want loyalty from the players, and when you look at it, it's a bit of an outdated concept. The Premier League is now kind of largely populated by foreign players who quite rightly want to experience different countries, different cultures. I think I suspect Salah was probably in that category when Salah's come to Liverpool. Been absolutely fundamental to them winning the Premier League and the Champions League. And probably thought to himself, well, having already played in Italy, probably thought to himself, well, that was splendid. I might fancy a dig in Spain now, Real Madrid, Barcelona. But of course, those options aren't massively there now because of the situations financially that those clubs have got themselves into. And I think maybe that might have played a part in Salah thinking, well, OK, if that isn't going to be the thing, if I can't go and... do that, which he would have been quite within his rights to do and deserving of no criticism had he decided to do his 4 or 5 seasons at Liverpool and go, no problem as far as I'm concerned. If those options are narrower, then what better thing than to do to spend the rest of his time at a fantastic football club where, once again, the potential for achievement looks to be absolutely enormous. Firmino was magnificent yesterday. Pause before calling him a centre forward, whatever that role is that a modern number nine plays. He was magnificent. Mane wasn't even on the field until the last minute. Jota has been a superb acquisition. They've got players coming through. Curtis Jones, Harvey Elliott. That Jordan Henderson shows no sign of slowing down. That pass for Salah's hat-trick. You know, I couldn't even draw that on a graph, never mind try and do it. It was an extraordinary piece of football. And at the back, they've probably got the best central defender in the world. And now the guy comes in, plays next to him yesterday, and looked like he's played there all his life. And the two fullbacks aren't bad. So, it's not the youngest team in the world, but it's not the oldest either. So, it's a very, very long way of saying, throw the world at Salah, try and get him to stay because if you can, you've got an incredible, incredible, incredible talent. When he scored that goal against Manchester City, I wasn't there. I was at home with the laptop on my knee and the laptop almost went through the ceiling. It was such an incredible goal. And he does it again at Watford. Does it again at Watford a week later. I mean, you live through you get to see these players play. Extraordinary, absolutely, absolutely extraordinary. Yeah,
I think Mo needs to get you in for his negotiations. I don't think
I'd be useless at that. I'd be useless. I'd just accept the first thing that they offered me. I'd be the worst thing. I'd be absolutely hopeless at that.
Peachy, you can't underplay it. We go out, obviously, a podcast goes globally, but a big audience in Egypt who just love to be there on the day to see him perform. What is it like being in a stadium watching him? You watch football time and time again. He put Ronaldo in the shade. Do you still have that pinching moment when you're watching him saying, this is special.
Yeah, it's just inevitable, really, that he's going to perform. I don't think I've ever seen him have a bad game. Maybe it's because I don't watch him week in, week out, but when you see him on TV, he always seems to be up there performing as well. He has a drive to match his ability, which I think is key. You saw that with the girl when his initial shot was blocked. He was the first to react. He was there, bang, straight in. And it was a great first time finish as well. I've been in Cairo and been in Cairo when Liverpool have played, and it's pretty crazy. Everywhere you look in Egypt, from my limited time there, there was a picture of Mohamed Salah. I've seen it on the back of a taxi, obviously billboards. You go into the local markets, and there's just pictures of him on every kind of thing that you can imagine. They must be incredibly proud of one of the best players in the world, if not on form, the best player right now. So yeah, I look forward to seeing his next game.
And Charlotte, just the prospect of Manchester City, two matches away. How apprehensive will the fans be?
Oh, nervous, rightly so. I mean, you look at the way City are playing, you look at the way United are playing, there's nothing to suggest at the moment that there won't be a repeat of what everyone saw at Old Trafford on Sunday afternoon. And there's those, as Simon was saying at the start, the fans that stayed behind and applauded the team off the pitch, even after that, you think, well, fair play, hats off to you. But if they keep putting in performances like that and then they lose to City in the same manner, I can't imagine that there's going to be the same level of support at full time. There was booing at half time against Liverpool. It wasn't really there at full time. And then you obviously saw, I'm sure you all saw the images of the fans streaming out after 65 minutes, which can you blame them really? The fiercest rivals and you've been absolutely hammered. But I think if there's a similar scoreline against Manchester City, you'd see the same kind of things, but you keep thinking they can't let it happen again. And then we said that after the Leicester game, they can't put in a performance as badly. There's got to be improvements. And then a week later, they did exactly the same. So at the moment, there's nothing to suggest that they are going to put in a performance any better against Manchester City. And we've seen the way they've been playing. And if they turn up like they can, then it could be another 5-0.
Ian, Bernardo Silva, we know that Pep didn't want to lose him, but against Brighton, Foden, so important as well. They're well back in this race, aren't they?
Yeah, and all this without a centre forward, as we like to keep saying. The Bernardo Silva thing is really, really interesting. And we all know that he kind of quite likes to play for Benfica again because he kind of has this kind of checkered history the way that he left. He said that in interviews before. And last season, when he wasn't in the team very often, I was wondering if maybe that time was nigh. I was saying to a few of the people who cover City regularly, where's Silva? Where is he? And no one ever really seemed to have an answer, apart from the fact he wasn't in the team much. But Pep Guardiola goes through phases like that with players, doesn't he? He would appear to be going through one like that with Raheem Sterling at the moment, where they kind of disappear from view for a while and you wonder if the time is up, and then the whole kind of cogs and the machine kind of start to turn and that player comes back to the top. Silva's a wonderful player. Wonderful technical play and can score a goal. And Foden, the only thing I say about Foden is it equates to the Raheem Sterling debate at the moment about how can Pep not play Raheem Sterling when he's played so well in the Euros for England and he scores goals for England. Well, let's go back 2 years when everyone was talking about Foden and we said, why is Foden not in the team? Why is he not in the team? Tell you why I wasn't in the team. Because he didn't deserve to be in the team. And Guardiola has proved himself to be expert at that, at deciding when players are ready and when they're not. And lots of people had doubts about whether, including Foden himself and the people who look after Foden, had doubts a couple of years ago about whether he was going to get the game time. Would he have to do a Jadon Sancho and leave? And look at him now. Look at him now. It's been the same with Bernardo Silva. And I suggest if Raheem Sterling just cools his jets a little bit, then it might be the same for him as well, and that his time might roll around again if he applies himself the right way. Guardiola has the ability to rotate that squad because of the depth of it. And the thing that always terrifies me about Manchester City is not the first 11, it's the bench. I mean, even Liverpool don't have a bench like that. Chelsea Chelsea are doing the best, but City's bench is extraordinary and has been for 3 or 4 years. And Guardiola's great at using it. And they're in fine form, aren't they? I mean, Brighton are a good side. I mean, what was it? 3-0 after 25 minutes it's not like Chelsea doing it to Norwich at home. I mean, Brighton are a good side. And that was, again, some performance as it had been away at Bruges in the week. You know, nobody wants to play Liverpool at the moment, but I wouldn't fancy playing City either.
You've just alluded to it there, and I feel like I'm on a Ole Gunnar Solskjaer or Manchester United's former managers, future managers thread. So Conte departed, Tuchel using many of his tactics. Peachy, how do you think Manchester City are viewing Chelsea?
Yeah, I mean, they've got the strength and depth, haven't they? Even when I'm trying to pick my fantasy team, I can't put a Chelsea player in like I can't put a City player in, because you just don't know who they're going to play each week. You know they're going to win. You know there's probably going to be goals. But you just don't know who they're going to lean on, because, I mean, you can look at their bench at any given day and they would get into any of really even the top four starting lineups of the other competing side. So they're a really good side. Tuchel hasn't well drilled. There's been a few matches this season where they haven't perhaps been at the heights that they have been in the past. They've shown in the past under Tuchel. But in the short time that he's been there, he's given them a real identity. He's brought a spirit to the group, and they're an exciting team to watch as a neutral.
And that bench heavily rotated, and then that incredibly convincing win against Norwich. If we have time, we'll go back to that debate a little later. Charlotte, keeping this thread of former and future managers at Manchester United, I want to speak to you about a manager, David Moyes, Patrice Evra writing, and my producer's going to take credit for this, for picking this one out ahead of the match, but Patrice Evra writing about the fact he knew that David Moyes wouldn't be successful in the era at Old Trafford because he asked the players how to win. Well, he's on top of them now. He's leapfrogged them in the table and just reviving this team's fortunes, playing very nice football.
Yeah, and I think that's not just this season. He was, personally, I think he could have been in for a shout with manager of the season for what he did with them last season. I think he's got them playing really well. He is a good manager. I don't think there's any taking away from that. When he took over from Sir Alex Ferguson, the expectation was so high. And because United had won the league, I think there was this expectation that he was going to come in, be in the same mould as Fergie, and United were going to carry on winning. That didn't happen. But if you look at the team he inherited, I don't think it was going to be possible for it to happen, no matter what manager they brought in. That transition period was always going to be difficult. And that for him ended up being a bit of a poison chalice, because then he got sacked and everyone's called him a failure. And I think that sort of hung over him for a little while, but now years down the line, he's shown that he is a good manager. You just need to look at what he's doing with West Ham. I think it's what Harry Kane said in his post-match interview, credit to David Moyes. He's a good manager. He's got them playing like this. And I think it's that little spell he had at United which cast doubts over his ability, but there was a very good reason why Ferguson thought he was the man for Manchester United, because he is good at his job. But those few months at Old Trafford kind of ruined his reputation a little bit, but I think he has rebuilt it now.
Ian, Nuno offered the job at Tottenham in probably the most embarrassing of situations, where they've gone to everyone but him. Is this just showing why Daniel Levy was so cautious, or do they absolutely need to stick by this manager because he hasn't had time to bed in really and work with this squad in any sort of pre-season?
They've got a new director of football who essentially chose Nuno. Nuno won't be going anywhere because he's the new man's man. I don't think the new man will want to sack his man. Unless he has to. And I'm not saying that Nuno's anywhere in that, should be in that discussion, by the way, but I'm just talking generally about what might happen there. I think Nuno is a type of coach who, if you like, you know, Wolves, he was a coach, wasn't he? I mean, let's not pretend for a minute that Nuno was signing the players at Wolves. They had that particular business model where Jorge Mendes was kind of running that side of it, and it worked. And Nuno provided a certain type of player. You know, you've got to remember when Wolves got promoted, they were quite a breath of fresh air under him. They were quite aggressive. I remember them giving Man City a heck of a game at Molineux. And it tailed away a little bit last season. So I think Nuno is the type of manager that if you give him the players, he can coach. I don't think he's going to win any awards, but he can coach. But I think at Tottenham, the recruitment is going to be key. I mean, they signed four or five players that signed have been kind of what you might call to the general fan kind of unknown foreign players. They haven't made any kind of statement signings. The Kane thing is a complete mess, isn't it, really, in terms of, you know, Harry will always, no one can ever accuse Harry Kane not trying when he goes on a football pitch, but then at the top level, you've got to be, it's more than trying, you've got to be absolutely, to be at that, absolutely switched on like those Liverpool players were yesterday. And is Kane at that level of emotional engagement with Tottenham at the moment? I would say that's probably a question that's worth asking. And they have to start building rebuilding some of the quality that they have lost there. I still think there's issues at centre back. I think that's still a bit of a mix and match and a patch up job with Eric Dyer doing his best. They've got issues, I think, in the holding roles as well. I think Tottenham can finish fifth or sixth, no problem. But that in itself is a regression from where they were two, three seasons ago. So I don't see Nuno being in any danger at the moment. I really don't. And I think the makeup of the squad is just in it as much of an issue as a manager there at the moment.
Peachy, you've got Arsenal and Leicester facing off against each other in the early kickoff this weekend. Two teams, they are coming back from a bit of a revival. Leicester's, I think, dip in form at the start of the season, the most surprising of the two. Who would you say is favourites coming into this one?
Well, that's a nice, easy question. I think it'll be quite an even game. As you rightly said, Leicester were, before they had that Manchester United game, they were on a bit of a rocky run. They broke out of that in some style, obviously. They had a fantastic win in Russia against Spartak Moscow. And then they rode their luck at times against Brentford, but they got the win. Arsenal have kicked on from a very uncomfortable period. Aubameyang starting to find the net with a bit more regularity. They're starting to click. They've started to find a bit of defensive coherency. I think it'll be a really good game. I think it'll be insane. I can't call it either way, to be honest.
Charlotte, I said I wouldn't discuss this. Don't worry, I'm not going to throw you under the bus completely. But it's West Ham, Manchester City in the League Cup. In terms of a challenge now for Pep Guardiola, that would have been a relatively straightforward fixture. He says he's going to play his strongest side, but that's now a really interesting tactical battle.
Yeah, of course it is. And I think West Ham knocked Manchester United out in the last round. Not that that's very difficult to do at the moment in the way that they're playing. But I think the problem that David Moyes has got is that Pep says he will play strongest 11, which I fully believe that he does, but he could still play 11 fresh players and it still be deemed as the strongest 11. And I think they're still going to be too, as good as West Ham have been playing and as good a job as David Moyes has been doing, like we say, I just still think that Manchester City are going to win that, even if they play a second string 11, because that's how good they are.
It'd be great to see West Ham play the strong 11. I'm saying that to me this morning. I think Pep's just playing with words, isn't he, when he says he's going to play strong. What he means is it's the strongest appropriate 11. He'll play.
Yeah, he's not going to play the 23s, is he? But I doubt he'll play his first choice 11, will he? But if, like we said, the strength and depth means that his second choice 11 is stronger than loads of teams.
It would be great, wouldn't it, if West Ham, if David Moyes thought, you know what, might have a chance to get to Wembley, especially if you can get rid of Man City, who win the thing every year. It'd be great if David Moyes put out his strongest 11, but I doubt he will.
Well, I think probably his priority is in other places, but he's doing so phenomenally well. I think he's only made four changes in the Premier League all season, and they did look tired at points. So I'm a bit worried about depth of squad there. But while we're on the conversation of Manchester City, looking to the weekend, they're facing Crystal Palace. You wrote in your column about Vieira's assistant coach Roberts, who was with the Wales set up as well. Although they are only getting draws, and once again against Newcastle, they are playing some lovely football.
Yeah, Hossein Roberts is a guy who won't be known to many people, but he was the former technical director of the Welsh FA. And there was a time 10 years ago when people like Vieira and Thierry Henry and others, instead of kind of doing the coaching badges in England or even in France, were going to Newport in Wales to do the Welsh course. And people kind of wondered why. some people were a bit sniffy and suggested that it was easier to get a pass on that course, but others were saying it was because of the quality of the instruction on that course. And Osain Roberts was the guy who ran that, and Briere has taken him as his assistant. Obviously was impressed enough 10 years ago on the course, taken him to, as his assistant to Palace. People who watch Palace every week tell me that they are playing really, really good football. I have my doubts about the Vieira appointment. You know, I hadn't really torn up trees at previous clubs. But I'm told that the way they're playing is much improved. But they've won one game out of nine in the Premier League. So I think before we start to get too excited about it, probably need to change that statistic a little bit. But yeah, people do say the football is easy on the eye.
Peachy, Southampton up against Ranieri. How do you even prepare for a match like that after two such different results and some very nice Chelsea signings helping you out?
Yeah, very very impressed by the way Watford recovered at Everton. I couldn't really believe it. Every time I check on my phone, they scored another. Be an interesting game. Ranieri will obviously, in his first match at Vicarage Road, didn't go particularly well for him, so I'm sure he'll be eyeing a chance to do better. Southampton have been quietly doing quite well, but there's been too many draws in there. I think it could be another draw, but I mean, I think Southampton have that ability. You kind of alluded to Broya, the striker, who has done really, really well, and there's still Adam Armstrong, Chad Adams to come and help him out with the goals. Tino Livramento has been signed from Chelsea, who's been fantastic. It's a solid side against a side that's still finding their feet under Ranieri. There may be some bumps in the road to come, but they will take a lot of heart from that result at Goodison Park.
Well, we have absolutely put the world to rights. We normally have a break, but we had a lot to discuss for Manchester United. So I'm going to bring us all up to end the show with our unsung heroes of the week. And I'm just checking all three of you managed to get one, because full credit for managing to turn up this morning after all of last night and the phone calls I know you've been receiving since about 7 a.m. I'll start with you, Charlotte, for your unsung hero of the week.
I've gone for Ranieri. I think the way that Watford, like we say, bounced back after that defeat against Liverpool, and also you just like a manager with a bit of personality. And I don't know if you saw his post-match on Match of the Day, and they jokingly said to him about the Liverpool game, and he said, oh, sorry, I don't remember that, I've forgotten about it. So I always think it's good to have someone like that back in the Premier League, who a bit light-hearted, brings a bit of humour to things, and also a great result, great performance, and it'll be interesting to see how they build on that this weekend.
Ian?
Mine is actually an unsung hero for the kind of season, really.
That was my error.
No, it'd probably be my fault, usually is. Shane Duffy at Brighton, I think, has been terrific. He obviously had a very difficult spell away from the club last season, and I don't think anyone expected him to be back in the team this time, and he has been. Brighton have played progressive football, done quite well, got himself in the top four at one point, and then Graham Potter didn't pick him at the weekend, and they're 3-0 down after half an hour, so maybe there's a lesson there. But I think in terms of showing kind of, you know, mental resilience, recovery, belief in yourself, yeah, I think Duffy's had a terrific first third of the season.
Lovely. Absolutely deserves that. Peachy?
If it was for the season, I'd go back to Tino Livramento, 18 years old, absolutely set the world on fire since he joined Southampton, kept Carl Walker-Peters out of the team. He was one of Southampton's better players since he arrived. If it was for the weekend, I'd say Josh King. Obviously, there were some bigger storylines, but Charlotte said Ranieri, so I'll say King. He was spent, for those that don't know, he was on loan from Bournemouth to Everton second half of last season, didn't really get a look in, came back to Goodison Park, scored a hat-trick. It's not a bad way to remind them of your capabilities.
All well-deserving of a shout-out, and we didn't get to cover all the weekend's action because, well, you know why. So forgive us for that, for all the many other clubs we haven't done justice, but my many thanks to Simon, to Charlotte, and to Ian. It's been a remarkable 24 hours in football, and plenty more to come. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank